Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. It's time for some dialogue. We're actually getting conversations with Arrendis in this episode. We're getting more insight into her character, and I'm excited to get into the details here. Also, we have a number of words that show up in this episode that are either unique and we haven't discussed them before, or are showing up again, and of course I'll be reminding you what they actually mean. So I'm excited to get into this because the story is starting to take a turn. And we get to see some personalities that we haven't seen yet, which is particularly important, at least in my opinion, of a character like Arrendis, because she's moving from somebody who's kind of a wallflower, somebody who has had very little influence on the story so far, other than maybe showing up to the boats in order to give her blessing so that Eldarion would return safely. But outside of that, we haven't gotten a whole lot of insight into her thoughts on everything. But now we do. Now we get an opportunity. And before we get into it, I want to ask you the question. What do you think her perspective is on the sea? And maybe even more importantly, on Eldarion and his intentions for his future as a ruler of Numenor. Well, hold on tight. Here we go. When we left off last time, I read this last little paragraph, which does kind of answer some of the questions about her opinions of the sea, at least in a very specific context. The passage said, "And begrudging to all ships the felling of trees which she loved, she determined that she must utterly defeat the sea and the ships, or else be herself defeated utterly." This is one of those passages where Tolkien is doing this thing where he's using one of the characters to foreshadow the future, or at least pose limitations and expectations on the future and set up the coming conflict. This idea that she must be opposed to the sea and defeat the sea, or she herself will be utterly defeated. And on top of that, we get this insight into the felling of trees. She loves them. She loves the trees. This story is taking shape to be a story between the wills and the loves of a man whose heart is with the sea and a woman whose heart is with the land and the plant life. It feels kind of like a classic setup from a Shakespearean play or something like that. These two star-crossed lovers, but there's something that's holding each of them back from each other. But where exactly does this go, and how does it manifest itself in the relationship? Well, we start off finding out that Eldarion wooed Arrendis in earnest. He has decided finally to follow his heart. And we're told that wherever she went, he would go. He neglected the havens and the shipyards and all the concerns of the guild of venturers, felling no trees, but setting himself to their planting only. And he found more content in those days than in any others of his life, though he did not know it until he looked back long after, when old age was upon him. we have another one of those situations where Tolkien kind of tells us what's going to happen in the future. Well, is Aldarion going to die anytime soon? Nope. He lives a long time. But this makes sense not from a, hey, we're going to ruin the end of the story kind of perspective, but from the perspective that stories like this would be written by people who already knew certain details about the characters. Oh, Aldarion, you mean that king of Numenor who lived into old age and he loved the sea? Like, people would have known those bits, so why hide them in a story written in this style? So time goes on, and it has now been 100 years since the founding of the Guild Adventurers. Yeah, let that sit in your mind for a moment. Can you imagine being the kind of person who lives a long enough life that you can celebrate the founding of something you founded 100 years ago and yet still feel young and in good health? Well, that's the line of Numenorean kings here. And so he's trying to persuade Arrendis to sail with him around the island, not too far, to go to the different havens of Numenor and celebrate in these feasts with the venturers. And Arrendis consents. And it says here, concealing her distaste and fear. So they leave Romena and they make their way to Andúnié in the west side of the island. And there is, over on that side, the lord of Andúnié, Valandil, who hosts a great feast for them as part of the celebration, raises his drink because Arrendis is there with him. Of course, I can imagine she's doing the best she can to make her way through this ship adventure that she's not excited about. And he decides to do something nice, or at least it appears that he's trying to do something nice. He raises his glass and drinks to Arrendis, naming her Ueneniel, daughter of Uenin, the new Lady of the Sea. But Arrendis, it says here, who sat beside the wife of Valandil, said aloud, "Call me by no such name. I am no daughter of Uenin. Rather, she is my foe." And I would have loved to see more of the details of this moment. This is almost like one of those Game of Thrones types of moments, if you've watched the series or if you've read those books, where you have the different individuals from these different high-standing groups saying things and doing things in these nice guises, and then all of a sudden some truth comes out. Well, it appears here that the truth is that she genuinely perceives the sea and the realm of Uenin, the Maiar, to be her enemy. The very next paragraph, and this stuff moves pretty quickly, says, "Therefore, for a while, doubt again assailed Arrendis, for Aldarion turned his thoughts again to the works of Romena and busied himself in the building of great seawalls and the raising of a tower upon Tol Uenin, Calmindin, the Light Tower." That's what that means. It was named. Now, was it because of this conversation that happened and Arrendis revealing more of how she actually feels to him that he did this? Or was it simply time to turn back to the focus of the things that he had been working on? The timing makes it feel more like it might be part of the former than the latter. But eventually he returns to Arrendis again and decides to seek her betrothal. He's ready for marriage. He's made up his mind and he goes to her. But she delays, and she says, "I have journeyed with you by ship, Lord. Before I give you my answer, will you not journey with me ashore to the places that I love? You know too little of this land for one who shall be its king." And in this, you can see how bold she's becoming. She's openly criticizing him in the same ways that his father did. So he agrees to go with her, and they head over to Emyrie. This is an area of rolling hills and grasslands, sheep, pasturages. Is that the right form of that? Pastures, pasturage, pasturages? I don't know. But sheeps and white houses and farms and shepherds and flocks, all, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's a very landy kind of place. This is not somewhere near the sea. And they have this conversation. And here, I'm going to just read through the conversation and let me know what your thoughts are on this. "There Arrendis spoke to Aldarion and said, 'Here could I be at ease.' Then he responds, "You shall dwell where you will as wife of the king's heir," said Eldarion. "And as queen in many fair houses, such as you desire." "When you are king, I shall be old," said Arendis. "Where will the king's heir dwell meanwhile?" "With his wife," said Eldarion, "when his labors allow, if she cannot share in them." "I will not share my husband with the Lady Uenin," said Arendis. "That is a twisted saying," said Eldarion. "As well might I say that I would not share my wife with the Lord Orome of Forests, because she loves trees that grow wild." "Indeed, you would not," said Arendis. "For you would fell any wood as a gift to Uenin, if you had a mind. Name me any tree that you love, and it shall stand till it dies," said Eldarion. "I love all that grow in this isle," said Arendis. Then they leave in silence, and they depart, and Arendis heads back to her father's house. You can see here that Eldarion is trying to answer her criticisms and her questions, and she keeps pushing it further, really trying to make her point. And I'm sure we all have our experiences with these kinds of conversations in our own lives and our own interpretation of reading through this. The way this feels to me, and please feel free to share your perspectives as well, but the way this feels to me is that Eldarion is trying to placate her, trying to say, "Oh, well, you love trees, then pick a tree. We'll make a tree your tree. It won't be felled. It won't get cut down. It'll be fine. I can take care of that. Don't worry. Oh, and where's the wife of the heir of the king going to be? Well, wherever she wants. She can be whatever house she wants. She's basically going to be the queen. She can make up whatever decision she wants. It's totally going to be fine. It's fine. Don't stress it. It's going to be fine." That's the perspective I have for Eldarion here. And her perspective is that her feet are very firmly planted, both literally, well, maybe not literally, almost literally, but completely figuratively. We use literally wrong, don't we? But she's firmly planted in this perspective that anything he does for Uenin is against her. Anything that he does for the sea is against her. If they decide to actually finalize this marriage and he goes off to the sea again, then she loses. And she's concerned about aging. She's concerned about where she will spend time being alone. And then, of course, the future state of the Isle. She's using all of these concerns and piling them on to try to make her point. And he keeps trying to dodge it. And when she returns home, she has a conversation with her mother, Nuneth. And Nuneth tells her the conversation. Nuneth responds, "All or nothing, Arendis," said Nuneth. "So you were as a child, but you love this man. And he is a great man, not to speak of his rank. And you will not cast out your love from your heart so easily, nor without great hurt to yourself. A woman must share her husband's love with his work and the fire of his spirit, or make him a thing not lovable. But I doubt that you will ever understand such counsel. Yet I am grieved, for it is full time that you were wed and have borne a fair child. I had hoped to see fair grandchildren, nor if they were cradled in the king's house would that displease me." You can see that her mother is on the side of just deal with it. Just love this man for who he is, support him, and bring me my grandchildren. That's kind of the perspective from her mother here. Listen, you've got the opportunity to marry into the line of kings. That doesn't just happen. And oh, by the way, he's a good man otherwise. Also, this might be your only opportunity to get married and give me grandchildren. So give me grandchildren? Can you do that? It's kind of the perspective of her mother here. But we're told that this council did not indeed move the mind of Arendis. Nevertheless, she found that her heart was not under her will, and her days were empty. more empty than in the years when Eldarion had been gone. For he still abode in Numenor, and yet the days passed, and he did not come again into the west. So let me tell you a little story. You know that we get sponsors on these podcasts, and Yuffie, who does these smart locks with video cameras in them, reached out and they sent me a smart door lock with a 2K camera, a doorbell, and a finger reader, all the bells and whistles. And I was like, okay, cool. They sent it to me. I already have one on my back door. When I opened this up and installed it, I was like, why didn't I go with Yuffie to begin with? Because this is a step above the one that I've been using. The finger reader just works. The 2K camera is so clear. I can see when somebody's at the front door, if it's Amazon or if it's somebody trying to sell me something. It even has night vision and works in the dark. It makes me feel so much safer. Plus, my son can just put his finger on the door and just come right in when he gets home from school. He doesn't have to worry about losing keys, and you don't even have to change the batteries in these because it's got like 10,000 milliwatt hour battery that lasts for like 4 months. Go check these out today. Search for Yuffie Video Lock, that's EUFY Video Lock, or visit yuffieofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door. Again, search Yuffie Video Lock. I think you'll love it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. Welcome to our newest patrons. Thank you to everybody who helps support this show. And welcome to Birdlington and Whitepaw for signing up on the Patreon. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. If you want to check out everything over there, you can take a look at the t-shirts. You can get ad-free episodes. There's a bunch of stuff. And if I'm helping you get through your workday, if this helps you get through your commutes or mowing your lawn or working out or whatever, then if you want to give me a little bit of a kickback and get something really nice for it, then go check it out. I really do appreciate all the support. Also, I have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Here, let's go down the list. AKA Music Lover, Anakin Skywalker, Apollo, Aragorn III, Austin C, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Black Squirrel, Brandy D, Cutter Metalworks, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Drupal, Fulcrum, Gimli a Break, Gemma D, Jesse P, J Eggs, Jezzer, Kate L, Katie S, Capenna, Lore FC, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Michael M, Nick K, Nostrils of Sauron, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Peace Lutheran Church, Richard J, Rosie Rose, Sam B, Sauron for Life, Seju, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much to all of you for your support. Also, thank you if you've decided to leave a 5-star review anywhere. If you decided to do that with words on Apple Podcasts, then I'll read it out on a future episode of the show. I don't have any new ones this week, but you could be the next one to get read out. So drop those reviews. Also, if you rate the show on Spotify or whatever other podcatcher, or share it with your friends, any of that stuff, absolutely super helpful, keeps the show going, and I really do appreciate it. All right, I'm not going to take any more of your time here in the middle. Let's get back to the rest of the story. I think I've discovered maybe one of the most realistic versions, or at least realistic things that happens in this story so far. It's this part right here. Now, Almarion, the queen, being acquainted with Nuneth, with what had passed, that means like the queen and Nuneth being friends, or at least knowing each other, and fearing lest Eldarion should seek solace in voyaging again, for he had been long ashore, sent word to Arrendis asking that she return to Armenelos. Basically, the queen and her mom, Arrendis's mom, have been chatting. there's a little bit of rumor going on. And so they're like, well, we need to make sure these two get together. We got to make sure that Aldaria doesn't take off again. We got to get them face to face. So let's get them together. And then it says, and Arendis, being urged by Nuneth and by her own heart, did as she was bid. So we get this glimpse here that although she's still fervently against the sea, she still loves him. She's still drawn to him. So time goes by, and it is now in the spring of the year. And we're told that when the time of the Eruk Yrme, it's a strange word for Tolkien words, E-R-U-K-Y-E-R-M-E, Eruk Yrme, was come. And this was a as part of the celebration where there are three prayers held at the summit of the Meneltarma. And it was part of their yearly festivities, those kinds of things. They go to this and they ascend, and it says here, in the retinue of the king to the summit of the Meneltarma, which was the hallowed mountain of the Numenoreans, which we've talked about multiple times. So the two of them go up with the king as part of this entourage for the celebration and the giving of prayers. And once it's all done, Aldarion and Arendis linger behind, and they look out from the summit across the entire isle. Then it says here, seeing all the Isle of Westernis laid green beneath them in the spring, then they saw the glimmer of light in the west, where far away was Avalone, and the shadows in the east upon the eastern sea. Shadows there seems important. Shadows in the east, there's still darkness out there, in a literal and figurative sense. And the Menel was blue above them. They did not speak, for no one save only the king spoke upon the height of Meneltarma. This was kind of like a Holy of Holies kind of situation, where they could all go up the Meneltarma together for this festivity. But when you were up there, only the king, only the head of the entire Numenorean people could speak. Everyone else had to remain silent. It was almost like it was like a holy thing they were doing. And then they come back down and they have this next conversation. She stands there for a moment and looks out toward the woods of her home in that very specific direction. And then she says to Aldarion, do you not love the Yozayan? And I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of that because it is a very strange word. It means the land of gift. Basically, she's confronting him here again and saying it in a very provocative way. This projection of what she thinks he does or doesn't do. Do you not love the land of gift? Basically, she's saying, what's up, dude? Do you not love Numenor? You see how that would sound, right? Well, he answers her. And again, he's very careful with his words. He says, I love it indeed, though I think you doubt it. Well, clearly she does, right, dude? It goes on. For I think also of what it may be in time to come, and the hope and splendor of its people. And I believe that a gift should not lie idle in hoard. You can see that there's extra stuff going on here, right? He's not only answering the question, yes, I love it, but I also am thinking about the future of it, of its people. And I also think that if it is something that you truly love, a gift, a gem, you shouldn't just hoard it away in the dark. It needs to go out into the world. Now, maybe this explains some of his seafaring. But she doesn't take it well. She responds like this. She denies his words and she says, such gifts as come from the Valar and through them from the One are to be loved for themselves now and in all nows. They are not given for barter, for more or for better. The Edain remain mortal men, Aldarion. Great though they may be, and we cannot dwell in the time that is to come, lest we lose our now for a phantom of our own design. Basically, she's saying, live in the present. You can't just focus on the future. You can't think about this as a gift that we can barter or we can spend. We need to live in the now. And then, it says, then taking suddenly the jewel from her throat, she asked him, and remember the gem, the diamond, the big diamond that she's been wearing. She says, would you have me trade this to buy me other goods that I desire? Basically, she's trying to make an example here. And he responds, no, he says. But you do not lock it in a hoard, yet I think you set it too high, for it is dimmed by the light of your eyes. Now, okay, my initial thought of how I interpret this is, oh, he's just trying to schmooze her, right? Like, well, no, like, let me make my point. No, I don't think you should trade it, but also you aren't locking it in a hoard. That was my example. You are wearing it out for other people to see. You're using it in a way where you can share it with others. That was my point. Also, you wear it a little too high because it's not quite as pretty as your eyes are, is basically what he's saying, right? Then he kisses her on the eyes, and in that moment, she put aside fear and accepted him. It works. And their troth was plighted upon the steep path of the Meneltarma. Basically, they head down the mountain with this resolution somehow from this. He says something sweet to her, and maybe that was enough. Then they went back to Armenelos, and this is how it ends. This is how this section ends. And Eldarion presented Arendis to Tar Meneldir as the betrothed of the king's heir. And the king was rejoiced. And there was merrymaking in the city and in all the isle. And next time we're going to continue into this whole betrothal, getting married thing. But before we go, I want to get your perspective on the dialogue that we've had in this episode, the relationship between the two of them, and what we are shown and maybe what we aren't shown. How does this actually work? And I'd love your opinions on this. So please comment on the Discord or comment on this post on the Patreon, wherever you feel comfortable. And let me know your thoughts. Is Eldarion doing enough? Is he actually dissuading her fears? Is he approaching her critiques with actual responses? Because it seems like he's still making his point, and it seems like he's doing what he can, but he's keeping both of his feet in separate places. He's very clearly spread between his love for her and doing the things that he should do as the heir to the king, but he's also kind of keeping his other foot available on the side of the boats and the sea, almost like he's standing with one foot on the land and one foot on a boat. And he seems to continue to be doing this. And yet, even with her extremely direct critiques and questions, she still gives in. And maybe she doesn't really have a choice. Because what is the choice? She's basically a commoner. She doesn't come from high standing. She has the potential to become the future queen of the island, to marry into the royal line. If she doesn't do that, she leaves all of that life behind. But then she goes back home and she's alone. She feels like she's aging out of the potential to get married. She doesn't have anything else. Is this just a rock and a hard place situation for her? Is there no good answer? And how does she change the way she feels about the potential for him to leave again and fearing for his life and his safety and the future important decisions he has to make as king? If she has to be part of that, she needs to feel like she's at least in line with it or is still important to him. And then on his side, how does he keep doing what he's doing when he's anchoring himself to the land and to a wife? Everything that this story is telling us is that it's heading toward a tragic end because these two characters will not be anyone other than who they actually are. They might make decisions temporarily in time, but ultimately, they are who they are. Maybe this is some great insight into humankind, into the way people act. That deep down, even when we fight it, even when we temporarily make decisions against the things that we deeply, deeply love, ultimately we always come back around to it. Or maybe the story's going somewhere else. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see until next time. Thanks for being here this week, and I'll see you soon. Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.